All right. Good morning, everybody. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, January 31st, 2017. Note that our colleague, Laura Olson, is under the weather today, and we wish her well because I know she'll be listening to this. And now I ask if everybody please join the Board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you again. Good morning. Public comment number one, this is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. I will say this, if you're here for the Project Iowa presentation or the Bella Holmes consideration, if it's okay with you, we'll hold you and we'll have you come up while we're talking about that item. If you'd prefer to speak now or if you want to speak on something else, the Bella Holmes is Iron Bridge, by the way. If you want to speak now or you want to address something else, now's a good time to come up. So we'll take public comments at this point. And seeing no one moving to the microphone, I'll assume that you want to speak to your individual topics. Next item is discussion and consideration of proposal for Story County funding for Project Iowa. Julie, I'm not even going to attempt your last name. It's Julie and Jan Flora.
Fig and Shoe.
Say it again.
Fig and Shoe.
Fig and Shoe.
It
okay.
Look like that.
I won't remember that, but okay.
Where would you like to go?
Right there.
Okay.
Outstanding.
Stand in for a jam.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Sir, introduce yourself for us.
I'm Terry Lohman.
Terry, good to see you. The square right in front of you is actually a microphone that picks you up, so you can just speak without worrying about the microphone.
Great. Okay. Julie asked me to give a little history of Amos. We're a collection of 27 churches in central Iowa, and I think NAMI is also in there. There might be one other group now. I've been helping with them for about the last 5 years. It's congregationally based community organizing. And one of the topics that came to the top was we needed to work on jobs. And an organization in San Antonio, their affiliate there, had done a project. They called it Project Quest. And they take people who are either unemployed or working part-time or flipping hamburgers and they want to do something else, and train them, give them counseling. We call the counseling part of a VIP. That's the, what do those stand for?
Vision, Initiative, and Perseverance.
Right. And it's very successful. About 90% of the people who start out finish it, and of that, about 90% actually get jobs that are considerably better than what they had. When we look at a community and we're trying to have affordable housing and everything, a better way would be to give people better jobs with better compensation. It's a little easier than trying to build houses and figure that out. That's really an expensive project. My youngest son went through, and he had a lot of challenges before, and he's got some challenges now, but he did well when he was going through Project Iowa, and he got a good job and was doing pretty well. Since then, he's had some more issues. But it was really, really good to see that they had a project that the counseling end of it really helped him. He needed somebody to hold his hand and kind of help him nurture through. But he was one of their top students. He's a real bright kid and everything. Just needed a little more help. I wanted to speak to my first job out of college was selling business forms, and our credit department looked at a 98% collection rate as being the optimum rate. If you had a 99%, you're probably turning down so much business that you're actually going backwards. And so just because every child or every person who takes the Project Iowa doesn't go out and get a good job, it means we're accepting everybody who has any potential, and we're not leaving people out that should be included in this.
Outstanding. Thank you. Well, so I'll start with how appreciative we as a Board of Supervisors are for the work that Amos does here locally and how involved you are. I'm always so appreciative when a lot of people are willing to point out the issues that face us. Much fewer are willing to dig in and try to solve or try to help solve some of those issues, and Amos is clearly one of the latter. Thank you very much. So Project Iowa, Julie, tell us about it.
Well, so Amos did this research, and they did it both in Polk and Story County. And it was house meetings talking to individuals saying, what are the barriers to the American dream? And what came up was a livable wage career. People just wanted to work one job, wanted it to be steady, wanted it to provide benefits. At the same time, when Amos began looking at this, things were going really well, and everybody was saying they didn't have enough skilled workforce. Then the recession hit. We still moved through all of that. And what we found is there are employers that need workers, need good workers, and there are people out there looking for that kind of work. As we talk to employers, and part of the whole model is that employers are on board and help us create the training and are willing to interview people that have completed our program. So we have to have the business. We can't just train people for jobs if there's nobody there to hire them at the end. So we do have business partners that are committed. And part of what they said is it's not the technical skills that are missing. The technical skills most businesses are going to teach because they're experts at whatever that is, whether it be welding, whether it be manufacturing, whatever type. What was missing was a lot of the core skills of accountability, showing up on time, knowing they have value, doing value add to the company. And the first thing we noticed as we started doing this, so Project Iowa has been around for 5 years this February. We started in Polk County. We've touched down in Story County a couple of times. We've held some recruitment events, and we've held one training here. We'd like to enlarge that. This is what this is about. What we noticed when people started coming through the door, what they were missing most was hope. And I think Terry spoke to that about his son. We have a lot of individuals out there that are able and willing to work, but they've been told by lots of systems throughout our community that they are not worthy, or they're not capable, or they're an addict, or they're homeless, or they're a felon. And we don't believe that to be true. We believe every individual has value and purpose that they are given to add to our community. So it's a matter of uncovering that and helping those individuals recognize and change some of the thought patterns that lead to some behaviors that don't keep them in a job. So we really do a lot, and as Terry mentioned, it's VIP, Vision, Initiative, and Perseverance. And really that's the core of what makes us very different. One of the pieces that makes us very different than any other training program that you'll find out there. Because we believe every single human being has everything that they need to be successful and be a contributing member of the society. We don't think outside forces are going to give it to them. I don't have some magic power to give someone that ability. We believe by supporting and letting them uncover it, they can move to be contributing members to our community. So that's really the core of what we do. We're very relational, much as Amos, versus transactional. So we don't count our success on how many people we train. We count our success on how many people are placed, retained, and advanced. So our goal is to make a match, both for the company and for that person that is long-term. That the company adds value to the person's life, and the person adds value to that company life. So really looking at culture, values, seeing how they match. Anybody can get a job. Most anybody can get a job. But to get a career is very different. So to go get up every morning and go and do something that you know you add value, that if you're not there, you'll be missed, makes a huge difference. So we do a lot of work with companies, and we work with wonderful companies throughout Story and Polk County right now. We do a little bit in Jasper. That realize the best asset to their company is the employees. So we really work hard to find those companies that will value and help grow this workforce that we have. It doesn't look like it used to look. It's much more colorful. It's got much more background. And so, you know, helping employers understand that the gifts and talents are out there that look a little bit different. So our training is 3 months, a three-month period. So we have over 150 contact hours with individuals. So we know them pretty well by the end of it. And we then try to place them and match them with companies that it would be a good match, whether it be because of their values or what they do or the hours, you know, all those kinds of things. And I think you got the statistics. So our overall placement rate right now is at 90%. So we stay with individuals until they get placed. And then we follow them for up to 1 year of placement.
I wanted to add one thing. One of the more impressive stories was training the welders. And Vermeer was ready to move out of the state. And Project Iowa helped get them the trained employees so that they didn't have to go elsewhere looking to put in a facility.
So probably some of your questions. So our rate of placement and graduation rate is very high, and we believe that's due to relational things. Some of the issues and some of the things that Amos has been working on for us here in Story County is that we have companies willing and ready that we've met with, and we need to continue to cultivate that are looking for those skilled employees. Would they hire from Project Iowa? We need to recruit. We need to get on the ground and really look for individuals that would benefit from this programming. You know, you have opportunities in Story County. You have community college. You have some other things. Typically, our population looks a little different. We have 64% that have some kind of criminal history or background. So manufacturing is a big company or a big industry for us. We do some healthcare. We do some business. And so finding those people is where we really need people's help. We use Amos a lot to reach out to locate individuals. We've been to your Human Service Alliance on a number of occasions and worked with different providers here in Story County. We want to do a much better job of finding those individuals. Some of them are at the drive-through windows, and some of them are at businesses already working for $7.25 an hour. So just having someone on the ground to go do that. A little bit about our history and funding, because we are coming to you for funding. Hope County supervisors have contributed to Project Iowa. They made a $50,000 commitment in 2013-14 as we were up and running. We are going back to them this year, so they have been committed. We do receive state money. We are aligned in the state budget to do this training. We look to foundations, United Way, Northwest Area Foundation, and we have some through the federal government through the Victim of Violent Crime Act dollars. So our goal for funding and to take this project to new areas is to really look at a third government, federal buy-in, a third business, and a third private. So we really want it to be a partnership. We don't want any one agency or any one government. We want it to be a diversified funding.
Absolutely, but you're right? Talking about longer term, because your ask of us today is that the Board of Supervisors would step up and fully fund this for 1 year.
No, we would have other dollars in.
Okay. Tell me where those are coming from.
Well, we would use some of our state dollars, because we do, we're on a piece of paper for the state. I was down there yesterday, so I'm not really sure if we'll get it, but we have been... that's supposed to be used statewide. So that would be used to implement some of the programming that we would be doing in Story County.
So we would. So the Project Iowa, what we're talking about today, would be funding what's currently happening in Polk and touching Jasper and Story, but bringing it more squarely to Story.
Yes, we would use your specific dollars to fund what we would be doing in Story. It would be here. So we have already received a $12,000 contribution from the UCC Church here in Ames, so that would be added to that pot of money, because that is specifically to train people from Story County.
Absolutely. So what is the cost of training an individual? Somebody comes into the program, they go through the program 3 months, and then we support them for up to a year after that. What does that cost?
It's about $5,000 a person.
And we're
from start to finish. From
start to finish. Absolutely. All the way through the whole project. And we're talking about doing up to 12 people in Story County is what I read in here.
Correct.
And so if I multiply 12 times 5, I get to 60,000, and that's the ask that you're coming to. So just help me with where you're not asking us to fully fund it this first year.
Well, we would like up to 12. to be in the program. That wouldn't be a stopping point. If I had 22 people, we would train. I mean, we like to keep everything we do is in cohorts of people, meaning we want small groups because we try to build community.
Sure.
So it's we don't like to go over 15. But it would be the start. So it's really a seed
Correct.
To begin. What we found in previous times, as I've been up here, and we have done recruitment efforts prior to this, I was housed out of Carey McPartland's place over at Salvation Army, and so that's how I got to know some of the people, and we did recruitment. One of the biggest issues I saw, what I know, is every community is different. So Julie Figenshue or whoever came up from Des Moines to sit in an agency one day a month does not bode well with the population. I'm not trustworthy. They don't know me. Is she going to show up this Tuesday? Is she not? So really our plan is, and what we've learned, I think, from being here previously, is that I need a foot soldier that knows Story County, that's here, that is available, that is much more embedded in the community. So the idea, and what I think we know we have to have to make it work, is we have the model. I have a model that I can guarantee you will work. And we're based on relationships, so we need a relationship here. I need somebody here on the ground. And so the investment we're making is not for just 12 people to come in, touch down, train 12 people, and get out. It's for a long commitment of putting someone in place to become an institution within Story County that people know that they can come to that provides these services.
Absolutely, and so. Please understand, Julie, I'm a believer in seed money to start up projects like this. I am a huge supporter of the concept that you just laid out. I love the work that you guys have done in Polk County. It is clearly having an impact. So I view workforce. I'm so glad that Angie Dornkamp from the Amy Chamber is here on our work with workforce. Traditional workforce models are more employer-centered, right? What jobs do we need to have individuals to fill, and then we work on filling those, and yours looks like it reverses that, and we say, okay, we've got these individuals who are not employable or are underemployable. What do we need to do to allow them to be ready for these jobs? And I think both fit together hand in glove. So that's the part that I love what you're doing. What you're proposing here today causes me it is not the model that we have typically followed in Story County. And when I say in Story County, I don't just mean the Board of Supervisors. I mean, we have a process called the asset process, which is where we fund many of these things. I know you're aware of it. And it's truly a partnership between Ames and United Way of Story County and Story County Government and, to a lesser extent, Student Government Association of Iowa State. And we partner together to fund these kind of things rather than any one of us really going out on our own to fund something and then expect the group to come along. And so I'm just trying to reconcile it all in my head as I take what I see as potentially a great beneficial program here locally and trying to figure out how we can fit that in to what we currently do here locally.
I would want to add that Amos does things for the long term. We made commitments on getting prenatal care, and it took us 6 years to figure out how to get it done. But we just stick with it until we do. And the people that are engaged in it, which are a couple hundred people, really, really care about how this fits together. And we're here for the long run. You're not here for just the next year.
So I've got a couple more questions, but Marty, I want to turn to you and see if you have any comments, questions, or thoughts as we...
You kind of spoke to one of the jump off because we just did the asset meeting here last week, and I was kind of surprised to see this come after that. I would have thought that would have been part of it. So that said, glad to see that you put the bar high enough that when you're looking at a 90% placement rate and you count that as success, what kind of contact do you have with these individuals after, you know, you get them placed? I mean, is there a kind of, you know, a back and forth? I mean, is there any kind of, you know, you get them there and you know that you've struggled to get them there? What are you guys doing on a follow-up basis?
Yeah, and most employers reported. So a lot of this model is based on our relationship with employers. So they talked a lot about the first 90 days, 3 months being the honeymoon period. Everything's great. They show up on time. They're really good workers. And then you start to see cracks because it's winter, because somebody gets sick, whatever. And so we really built in, you know, 3, 6, 9, 12, we call. However, we also offer to employers to call us. So once I place someone at a Kemen or a Bridgestone, they start to see cracks, they can call us back and just say, hey, Julie, you might check in with Matt. So we'll go back out and say, okay, let's do some problem solving. What is it here that's happening? What I've seen is a lot of self-talk, and we really do a lot, would be considered probably around cognitive behavior therapy. But we see a lot of thoughts get in place. So I had someone placed at Vermeer, excellent welder, but he couldn't figure out why he kept getting moved up. And so he'd be like, Julie, I gotta quit. And I'm like, why? What did they, did somebody say? No, I just, and what got down to is, he's like, I'm not good enough to be here. They're setting me up for something. And I'm like, no, stop that. So it's really trying to catch and be in relationship with them and just help them process through how to stay there and maintain. So a lot of people lose sight of their values. So they say they value family. And then they take off within the first 30 days because somebody's sick. And so they say to me, well, that says because I value family. And we try to help them see the long-term solution to that. That's great that you value family, but missing work, you could have just put your family at risk because you're at risk of losing that job, which then has health insurance. Could someone else have taken grandma to the doctor? Could you have taken her to the doctor after hours? Could it, you know what I mean? So just problem-solving tools. We're continuing to give people tools to use to be successful, and it doesn't happen in 3 months. We know that. That's why it's a long-term relationship. So we continue, and we have events that they can come to kind of, they can come back to VIP, they can reach out to us as well.
Well, that is a good model moving in a way that you might ensure success in individuals that might be willing to quit. And it's good to hear that you already have something in place in that sense. My question to you is, you would step into Ames area, how would you make your presence known throughout the county? I mean, if you're an organization that wants to take on just a handful of people, how do they come to you, and how do you go to them?
Ames has been helpful. We've used a lot of institutions to advertise that we're in town. And that's how we started in Des Moines. So that's how our first individuals came. And then after that, what tends to happen is word of mouth. So somebody gets a really good paying job, they tell their cousin, they tell their brother. I mean, so that's our best format. We changed our process and our model, and we were starting about 20 people every 6 weeks, 20 to 40 people every 6 weeks in Des Moines. And we had 80 registered for February. So we did this massive outreach. We changed our strategy. So we're learning. We're five, and we're learning. So we know word of mouth. We know social media. We know that some of our companies can be partners. So they're having a lot of people come through and give application, but not all of those individuals are good fits for those companies. Now, are they unworthy to work? No, not necessarily. Do they need some skill up? Possibly. So we can also ask that they hand out our flyers and say, listen, we're not able to hire you at this time, but perhaps if you go get some more additional training, you know, this could help. So we use them. And really, a person on the ground out there just talking, we've hired a couple people that have went through our program to be our recruiters, and they're the best. I mean, they're out talking to everyone. So it really is about a relational model. It's about offering people. And the other thing, as Terry mentioned, our requirements to get into it are very minimal, and that's on purpose. So what we do have is that you have to be legal to work in the United States, and that most of our companies want a high school diploma or GED. I'm working with companies for refugees because there's a whole population out there that don't have those. However, those are the minimum that we ask. But people walk through our door, we have people with masters come through. We have people that have BAs, that have AAs, but they just haven't found that niche of a career. So you walk through our door and you say, I want a career, you're welcome. So we have a wide range. We just helped place a guy that was a lawyer for 40 years, and he was out of work and came through our program and met with people and went to one of our companies to work on a part-time. He was 80 years old. We said, come on through. You're welcome. He was in the classroom with people that have been convicted for theft or murder. So they were in conversation, and they will then help network and get out. So we're open to everyone. So that helps as well. So we cast our net pretty wide about trying to find those individuals that can benefit.
Outstanding. You talked a little about your relationship with employers here in Story County. Can you share with us any of those existing relationships that you have?
Right. One of the first people that ever signed on was Al Mako. So we had them hire people for a while. And then, so we've had the upshift and the downshift of people. Dan Boss, we're in conversation with again to meet. We've talked to Barilla, 3M. So manufacturers are a big push.
Absolutely.
Right now, but who we know live in poverty is women and children. So we're really looking to work with businesses, banks, insurance, office jobs, to try to begin to do more placement for women as well, because they're not always attracted to the manufacturing piece of it.
Well, thank you. I really wish Loris was able to be here today. She, just in our short time together, she generally brings some enlightened questions to the conversation. Here's where I think we are. I think I would have real trouble having Story County be the sole provider of even speed for a program like this. I think that we need to talk to United Way and the City of Ames about also having skin in the game. And so what I would suggest is that we come out of this meeting and we put together a meeting with the asset administrative team, which is made up of one person from the county, one person from United Way, one person from Ames. Probably have one of the three of us supervisors attend that meeting. Julie, I'd want you to attend, and anybody, Terry, whether it's you or Jan, somebody from Amos, to start to talk through some of it. It doesn't make any sense at all to me to do this and have it be a one-off thing. We need to figure out how this would get funded long-term and how we would actually build those relationships. I'm so appreciative that you've been visiting with Angie Dornkamp and her role kind of on that other side of workforce development that I see. But that would be my suggestion going forward from this. So in my mind anyway, Marty, unless you feel differently, not a no today, but not a yes either. Hey, we need to gather some more information. We need to put together the people that can ask the right questions and make sure we're fully informed of what this is, what Story County's role is, and what it looks like longer term.
Absolutely. I think that's a good plan to make it sustainable and make it embedded in the community. So
super. So then our action is going to be, I'm going to ask Deb Shildroff to reach out to you in a week or so and start to pull together that meeting. Marty, you agree with all of that?
No, I just, once again, after just having gone through the asset meeting process, I would have thought this would have been something that would have been brought there to them.
Harder to get into the bottom end of the asset process to get it up and flowing. We've got multiple programs that are in the asset process this year for the first time, but they've been funded for a few years to get up and running. So I think there is a model to do something like this, but we want to do it hand in hand with the asset process.
Absolutely, and there are people that are willing to contribute, so it's not a no, it's just not right at the moment. That I would just ask that your forbearance in the fact that I think you have a good story to tell. I think you tell it well. And I think that we could probably, I have a reasonable comfort going forward, we could be a contributor and a partner. I just ask that you do some of the background that we're asking you to go meet with these people, and maybe they can be of more help or move you in a direction that would give you more sustainability. But
well, and we'll facilitate that. So we're taking it on us to facilitate putting that next meeting together. So if you, Julie, if you haven't heard from Deb in the next week or 10 days about putting that together, please reach back out to me.
I will.
I'll make sure it's happening.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thank
you guys
time.
Have a great day. All right. Next item is consideration of minutes from 117 and 124.
I would move adoption of the minutes for the two meetings from the 17th to the 24th.
And I'll second any additions, corrections, or notations.
None.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes passed. Personnel actions as listed.
Move consideration of the personnel actions as placed before us today.
And I'll second. Any discussion?
None.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda as listed.
I accept the consent agenda as it's placed before us today with no amendments or comments.
And I'll second. Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passed. And that gets us to public hearing items. Discussion and consideration of Ordinance 257, amending certain boundaries of the official zoning map of Story County, Iowa, for Resolution 1766. Iron Bridge, Jerry.
Morning, Jerry.
What a fascinating project, Jerry.
It is.
Process that we're going to use here is Jerry is going to go through and give the full report to the board. Then I'm going to ask the proposed developer to come up and talk to us or his representative. Then we'll open it up for public comment, and then we'll see where it goes from there.
Before I start, I'd like to give kudos to Chris for the extensiveness of the submittal that was made. They've done a lot of work. This is probably the most. This is Chris Gardner, Bella Holmes, who is here today, and his consultants. They've done a lot of work in putting together this request, which I think gets to his commitment and interest in what he's proposing to do. However, having said that, the county staff and the Planning and Zoning Commission do fall on the opposite side of the request, recommending denial, but I just wanted to make that known.
Well, we've worked with, the county has worked with Chris on several projects, and we found him great to work with, but we have to look at each project on its own merits and based on its own impacts. So give us the report.
Okay, so what we'll have is a rezoning request, which also includes the subsequent C2C map amendment request, so that would be one vote. And then there would be a vote on the subdivision request. So the property owners are Charles Lee, Ryan Halen, Ivan, and Laurel Kinnan. The size of the property is a little over 64 acres. We'll show you where this is located. So it's a rezoning request amendment from the A1 Agricultural District to the R1 Residential Transitional District, a C2C or Cornerstone to Capstone map amendment from the Natural Resources and Agricultural Conservation Areas to Rural Residential Area, and again the subdivision plat, which is a major preliminary subdivision plat. The name of it is Iron Bridge. Background, again, Chris Gardner is the applicant. Bella Holmes, interested in acquiring part of the 64-acre subject property. That will include a division of two of the existing dwellings that are in the northwest portion of what we're calling the subject property. Those two dwellings will stay under their current ownership. It'll also include two larger parcels. One is on the east side of the road, one will be on the north side of the road. One's a 13-acre, one's a 5. Those will stay in the current ownership. Chris is proposing to do a subdivision that will include 17 single-family dwellings. We're located a quarter mile north of the city of Huxley. We're east of Highway 69, adjacent to 550th Avenue, sections 13 and 14 of Palatine Township. Most of the adjacent surrounding land use, again, is A1 to the north. There is, however, to the south, which makes this contiguous, R1 residential. It's about an 80-acre area. So this shows you approximate location. Again, we're north of City of Huxley. City of Huxley corporate limits is shown in blue. It's north of the Ballard Golf and Country Club, outlined in red for you. The Ballard Creek extends through, meanders through the subject property. It's also to the south and to the southeast. Current land use, again, it's somewhat of a traditional or transitional area. You've got the Deer Creek subdivision to the south, which is about a 36-lot subdivision. To the north of that, there's four existing parcels that contain existing dwellings on them. You've got a heavily treed area, vegetated area, again, that would be a part of this subdivision. It extends to the west, to the east. We also have large row crops to the north. There's floodplain, scattered dwellings on larger parcels as well. The city of Huxley, there's current subdivisions going on in the northern portion of the town, primarily on the east and west side of Highway 69. If you look at their comprehensive plan, they do show future growth, though, east and west of their current corporate limits. So, again, this shows you the subject property. It's four separate parcels, making up that 64-acre area. This is the zoning map. Everything that you're looking at in the aerial is A1 agricultural district. The yellow represents the R1 transitional residential district, which is the Deer Creek subdivision to the south. This is from the C2C land use map. What is yellow is the rural residential designation. What is shown as green is natural resources. What is shown as white is ag conservation. And there is a discrepancy with our mapping that we've got a charge in our requirements to work with the conservation board staff in trying to correct some of the situations, errors, if you will, in our mapping. If you look at this map, this shows you the natural resource layer, and you can clearly see that we've got, you know, treat areas that are not designated as natural resources that should be. This is the rural residential area. Again, it's designated that primarily because of the existing single-family dwellings. There's a dwelling on each one of these four parcels. Two of those parcels, again, are a part of this subdivision, and there's a proposed division. And again, the ownership will, the owners of those dwellings will continue. This is an earlier concept that was provided before conceptual review that occurred with Story County Department staff. It shows the proposed access just north of the curve, a little over 900 feet in length with a short cul-de-sac to the north. The applicant, again, is proposing to acquire one of those lots, build his own home there. He also intends to build all of the homes in the subdivision. So this shows you, again, the previous submittal. It showed, the two cul-de-sacs, two detention basins, one extending to the north, and then one to the east. All the proposed lots and the proposed dwellings would be on the south side of the creek, which is in this area. Lot sizes range from 3/4 acre to a little over 2 acres. The larger parcels, again, were 5 and 13 acres. This is what they're landing on. This concept shows you a single access point and cul-de-sac road. Again, it's a little over 900 feet in length. By doing this, by removing the cul-de-sac, they're able to show the lots along the road. However, one of them, lot 16, doesn't meet the length requirement, the width to length requirement, and they're asking for alternative compliance on that. These are the various easements that they're proposing. There's easements for preservation areas, which are along the north portion, east portion, along the south part of the lots on the south side of the cul-de-sac road, as well as the south side of the creek area. Stream maintenance easement as well. The blue is the stormwater detention basin easement, and then the green are the open space areas, which they are also requesting a alternative compliance to that. Typically, there's a 15% requirement for lots over 10 lots. And for this size development, you're looking at probably about 9-acre requirement open space. So this is the site photos. We're actually looking to the south. The subject property is to the right. This is the approximate location for the access in. The grade is anticipated to be about 11-12% to the upper level treat area. This is on the south side of Ballard Creek in the low area. The creek itself We did walk this a few times, actually, and there's quite a bit of extensive erosion. You can see a little bit of that in the photo, just on the left side of that culvert. This is the upper level. There were some open areas, clearing areas, but you can see some of the vegetation and some of the mature trees. This is the million-dollar view, so to speak. This is looking north, northwest. This is one of the things that they're trying to capture with this proposed subdivision. This is the view down from the upper level, looking at 550th Avenue. It's probably 20-plus feet, 20, 25 feet grade change. North side of the creek. North side of the creek. Through the review process, county staff did throw out some suggestions on different concepts to kind of get the conversation steered from what was proposed to try to see if there was interest in moving lots to other locations within the confines of what was proposed. There was no interest for that. Looking northward, this is lot 18. That's on the east side of the road. 13-acre parcel. This is on the north area. The subject properties on the right side will be panning to the southwest and west. Again, this is another area that is suggested potentially for housing to put a majority of the lots to move them away from the natural resource area. We're into the standards in the Story County Land Development Regulations, standards for approval. First one talks about the rezoning shall conform to the development plan, in this case, the C2C plan. With the exception of the parcels containing the existing dwellings that are designated rural residential, much of the area is designated natural resources with a few pockets of ag conservation. However, as we mentioned, there's some areas with our mapping that we need to address, that we will address. Subject property is not located within an urban expansion area. These are areas that, through our work in the comp plan and communicating with the city officials, these were areas that they were intending to grow. This particular area is not an area that is an urban expansion area. Again, the city anticipates their growth east and west of their current corporate limits. In the comp plan, natural resource area description states areas designated as natural resource area illustrate natural resource elements which present limitations to development and or contain sensitive environmental conditions requiring special design development standards when development is proposed. The first principle one states generally discourage development within these areas in unique circumstances where appropriate development types may enhance the area. Recognize and encourage such approaches. Two talks about mitigating impacts of proposed development that are even contiguous to natural resource areas. Three, consider areas identified as natural resource area for inclusion in the Greenbelt Conservation District. It's important to note here, though, that dwellings are not a permitted use in a Greenbelt Conservation District. Four, develop site planning and performance standards to apply to properties designated as natural resource area not included in the Greenbelt Conservation District in which limited development may occur. And again, as I mentioned, our department, other departments in the county, we have a charge to work on some of these principles, some of these ideas, and that work has not started yet. So in the Conservation, Natural Resource, and Recreation chapter of the plan, under 3.6 objective, it says minimize human impacts on native plant and animal populations, the ecosystems they comprise, and processes that sustain them. 3.7 says restrict development within environmentally sensitive areas, including floodplains, steep slopes, wooded areas, and wetlands. Continuing statement of intent, proposed rezoning shall conform to the statement of intent, R1 transitional district. And it talks about it can have community facilities, open space areas. It does. Again, it falls short of that somewhat. The district is not intended to permit isolated rural dwellings. Again, we think what is proposed would meet the intent of the R1 transitional
district. However, it does fall short on the open space requirement. They are asking for alternative compliance on that. Third item, the proposed rezoning shall be compatible with surrounding land uses and development patterns. It would be a transition from the Deer Creek to the south, which has got 36 lots, to the four lots just to the north of it. Four, the proposed rezoning shall protect environmental resources. Rezoning of parcels containing more than 50% of the gross acreage as lands identified with areas designated natural resource areas on the development plan shall not be approved unless they're asking for a more restrictive designation, which they're not. RC Residential District conservation design is applied, or they provide conditions protecting the identified areas to the request, which is partly what they're trying to accomplish. So based on the information that they submitted, the natural resource area as it's mapped is about 44 acres, which is about 66%. The impact of the street, the footprint of the houses, drives, detention basin, again, they removed one of the basins, comes to about 6 acres or 13%. And again, they're proposing to mitigate by planting additional trees on the north and south side, which they claim brings that to about a net loss of about 2.6 acres. They're also planning those easements that we went through. Five talks about if it's zoned A1 or A2, which it is, if it has a land evaluation site assessment score that's low, then it can be considered for rezoning. We did do the analysis on that larger parcel, and it came under that threshold, and it's likely because of its proximity to the city of Huxley. We're looking at the subdivision. A lot of this I've kind of gone through. Again, 21 lots, 17 of those would be what Chris is bringing to the table with what he's proposing to do. We've got frontage along 550th. Access, again, we talked about that, about a 12% grade, which according to the county engineering department is somewhat steep, but within the tolerances of the statewide urban design standards. Public street, which would be paved and privately maintained. There's would be three outlots to the north. The applicant is proposing to build a building there to house horses. The two other outlots on the north side would be sold to an adjacent landowner. He's able to obtain city water if this is approved through the city of Huxley. Alliant Energy for gas, Consumers Energy for electric, and there would be on-site septic systems. They would also receive service from the Huxley Fire Department. Natural resources inventory, they did this fairly early in the process, identified oaks, black maple, thorny locust, ash, elm, evergreen, also talked about invasive species, honeysuckle, thorn bushes. They tried to get an idea as to what the impact would be on the road and then the construction of the basin, stormwater detention basin, and calculated about 13 thorny locusts, 13 evergreen, 8 deciduous trees would need to be removed, which would be a 4-inch or greater caliper. However, none of the oak trees would be impacted. It's important to note, though, that this Story County and the land development regulations, we don't list. We don't have a list yet for invasive species, vegetation, trees. They will let you know, though, that there is a statewide invasive species list. They did ask a representative from the Iowa DNR, a forester, Joe Herring, to do a site analysis, which we provided information in the package for that. With regard to their plan to develop the site, he identifies bur oak, white oak, red oak, hard maple, basswood trees. He also talks about invasive species, honeysuckle, multiflora rose, white mulberry, garlic mustard. And he says over time they will monopolize the native plants and affect the benefits to insects and pollinators.
He provided suggestions on species to thin out and what species to plant to actually speed up the restoration process. He also supported doing a reforestation on the north end where the crops previously were to assist with habitat, watershed protection, and then just to help with clean air. He also provided guidelines on things to do to minimize impact of construction activities on the existing trees. So, again, in the Land Development Regulations 88.05, again, it talks about how much of the natural resources that are identified can be impacted. It talks about 15% for grading of, you know, just grading, road work, construction, building clearance, general construction activity. Again, they're going to be under that 15%, but they are proposing to do the additional mitigation. They have plans in place to plant 4 trees per lot. And then also the plantings that they're proposing on the north and south end, and the work that they're planning in the detention basin. Alternative compliance, again, lot 16 is longer than what is required. I think the idea is, or the intent is to, you know, it's a planning concept of utilizing fully all the spaces from the access in to the interior spaces of the property. They're also asking for the open space requirement, alternative compliance. The intent there is, in addition to the lots that are being provided, which again are greater than a half acre, some up to 2.5 acres, that there be spaces provided in the development for whatever activity, whether it's walking, hiking, recreation purposes. Conceptual review was September 29 of 2016. There was a lot of input back and forth with the various county departments. And then when they made the submittals, there was a lot of questions, comments that went back and forth. I just summarized for the most part. Our department had a lot of questions about the layouts that were proposed, options that were suggested. Try to get information from the cities, from the other utilities that were proposing to represent the project, information about the natural resources and plans for protection. Conservation Department had questions about the natural resources, how they were calculated, overall impact on development and natural resources, and statements with regard to its impact on the C2C plan and that it was not in compliance with the plan. Environmental health comments on site evaluations for the septic systems, plans to monitor the systems, questions on restrictive covenants, tree removal, recent comments on what the impact would be on adding 17 homes, you know, what the impact would be to stormwater and wastewater discharging, effect on soil erosion and the impact on the creek. Engineering department questions, comments on where the access should be. The access location was actually moved to the north and east based on those comments. Comments on dust control. Questions, comments on location of the culvert for the access. Preference of having that be on private property versus the county right-of-way. The steepness of the access. Questions and comments about the direction that the water would be flowing. Auditor's office comments on ownership of land and development. Assessor's department explanation of how the lots would be assessed. General public, we did publish in newspapers December 29, January 12. Sent notification letters December 21. And had a corrected notice on the 27th. There was initially some confusion about what the rezoning area was versus the subdivision plat. It's the same boundary. We had a call from a citizen in opposition to the request on January 3. At the P&Z meeting on January 4, we received several comments from citizens. Some of them had just questions to get clarification on what was being proposed. Some of them offered suggestions on how to make the situation better by paving from the existing city road to the proposed development. And then a lot of questions and concerns about impact on natural resources, stormwater drainage, and soil erosion. We received comment from the city administrator of Huxley, who indicated that he saw no problems. He's waiting for county departments to or officials to respond to the request. We also sent notices January 18. We received a letter January 27 in opposition. And we had an individual come into our office yesterday to learn more about the request. Had concerns about she owned land, about 40 acres to the north. Wanted to make sure that it wouldn't be impacting the drainage that she's already receiving on her property. With regard to the analysis of the rezoning, the zoning map and the C2C map request, the property is contiguous to an R1 district. We showed you that. It's not within the urban expansion area of the city of Huxley. It would be consistent, we think, with what's conceptually proposed and identified in the ordinance for R1 residential transition district. The plat itself, it would be a transition from Deer Creek to the four lots that are to the north. Again, he's going to get city water, natural gas, electric. They are proposing one single access in, so with regard to the location and all, and the natural resources that are there, that's probably a positive point. On a downside, with a proposed development, you look at how it might connect with other proposed developments, and with this type of situation, that wouldn't be a possibility. We talked about open space and how that's falling short. And again, this is a proposed development that would be solely within the woods, substantially different from Deer Creek. Deer Creek, if you look at the aerials, much of the housing occurred in the pastured area. There's a couple of cul-de-sac roads. Again, those are on the periphery. The lots to the north, primarily developed on the periphery of the woods. They are proposing preservation easements for floodplain open space, planting areas, detention basin. We talked about alternative compliance, invasive species. And again, we just, through our review process, we threw out different concepts that we were hoping would spark some interest and stir the conversation in a different direction, and it did not. So, again, Planning and Zoning Commission on the 4th did meet. They recommended denial of the rezoning request, which includes the map amendment for the zoning map and the C2 map amendment, as well as the subdivision preliminary plat request. They basically referenced the C2C plan, which discourages development in natural areas, the impact on water, greenbelt, and wildlife corridor. They also didn't think that the homeowners would be willing to do and want to pay for the conservation work that's proposed with this project. So with that, I'd be happy to answer your questions. Again, there's at least two votes, one on the rezoning request and then one on the subdivision.
Okay. Good. More questions?
You have referenced that the city of Huxley had planned to move to the east or the west. Would anything that you've told us be reflected differently if you had seen that to the north, if they had put that in their urban expansion plan?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the expansion areas because that was a focus when we did the comprehensive plans. It's an area that we, are, as staff, are supposed to look at to decide where future development should go, as well as rural residential areas. And so the point here is this is not a location that in this region that's proposed for development.
And but even if it was, Jerry, how would you the idea that all of the development is occurring either within what is a natural resource area or probably should be designated as a natural resource area, how would that impact the conversation?
If they were proposing something that were like proposed for the east or west corporate limits?
That Huxley had indicated they intended to grow that way, I think was the question.
That was my, yeah, because the thing is, clearly that as this is contiguous to Deer Creek, you know, I to me, it just seems like a natural ladder up, but I get it. We're moving into an area that would some ticklish qualities, but you know, I can perfectly accept the idea maybe that they would have visited at some time to declare it as an expansion area. And my question to you on as a metric on your decision process, because had they done that, had this already been so designated, would that change anything that you've told us?
Yeah, if it were in the urban expansion area, then yeah, we would probably look at it a little differently, but it was not. They've got existing developments within the current corporate limits on the east and west side of 69. And their future mid-range plans are to expand east and west for residential development. They're also planning development to the south and east, but more for commercial and industrial out toward the freeway.
Other questions for Jerry?
Not at the moment.
All right. So let's hear from Chris Gardner or Chris's representative. Or both. Yeah, right up here, Chris. Thanks.
Since I met my wife.
I'm not sure how to take that, Chris.
Good. All right.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Chris Gardner, Bella Holmes, Bob Gibson, CDA, my wife, my business partner Mark, his wife Kari. Mayor Fox is here. We're all here to talk about this. Thank you for your time. I'm going to do my best to keep this short. I do promise you this.
Might be hard.
Spend the time we need, whatever we need.
Yes, you're dear to my heart.
Sure.
This one's personal. I said that the first time I met Jerry about this particular project. I said this one's personal.
Yep.
You know, I really, what we're, our intent is to show you that we can work together on this, and we appreciate everything that the C2C plan has done and adopted, and we actually believe in it and support it. We want to build on it and take what it started and take it to the next level. I really firmly believe that this can be a model of growth and development to work side by side with conservation and be a good steward of our natural resources. I fully believe that this, like I said, can be an example for other counties and other things to show that growth, tax dollars, development can work with conservation, and we can all actually achieve what we're after here. A lot of what's happening here today, in my opinion, is somewhat of a timing issue. Just because the C2C plan was just adopted in August. If we were here a year ago, maybe this would be a completely different discussion. Marty talked about City of Huxley, and we have a mayor here to talk about that because their land use plan was a little bit different, and things have changed in the last couple of years, even just the C2C plan has changed. So we can talk about that if needed. Really, just a lot of it's just clarity and understanding, and this is exactly what we plan to do. So that's what we're here to do, to talk about that.
There are some initial considerations we want to address in bringing some clarity to the issue of conservation and preservation and forest management. Like Jerry mentioned, we had a meeting with a DNR district forester. We walked the site, and we actually had a geotechnical engineer there as well to help us look at some of the soil issues and erosion and that kind of thing. But from the forester, we learned quite a bit from him, and one of the first things is that there is no such thing as a pristine forest. He said maybe somewhere up in Alaska you might find something, but pretty much nothing. That they are not static. They are always constantly in fluctuation and change and evolving, and often not in the best way. And we have aerial photographs that will show this. And my point in doing this is basically to set kind of a preservation baseline. Let me go back here. So
the initial considerations, what constitutes this preservation? What is the baseline for it? Does preservation mean as is? And if that's the case, is that always or even often the best approach? And does residential development mean degradation? So here's our preservation baseline, just to show you what this property has been over the years. 1933, look at the tree cover there. It was mostly pasture land. 1950, pretty much the same, a little more growth. 1960, on the west end, it actually looks like there's less tree cover than there was in 1950. And to point out that that west end is referenced in staff reports as being the most densely wooded. It's overgrown with woody plants, but it's not a forest. I mean, and it's dense. It's a jungle. It's literally a jungle. So. Okay, 1970, still pretty much the same. You see a little more woody cover showing up in that west end. 1994 is starting to look a little more like it does now. You can see more tree cover there and vegetative cover, but what kind is it? And really, the vast majority of it is the less desirable species, such as thorny locusts and red cedars and elms. And that's not saying that they're undesirable, but they're not like the oaks and the maples and things like that. But a big portion of this is the understory invasive species, such as the honey locust and the multiflora rose. And that the honey locust is a huge issue in that it really squelches the growth and regeneration of the more desirable species, especially things like oaks. So that's today. It's kind of dark, but you can see it does look densely wooded in an aerial photograph. But there are really no new or young hardwoods, no new oaks, and probably very few maples. The oaks there are old, large, and beautiful, and as Jerry mentioned, none will be impacted by the development. There are some just classic trees that have obviously been there for 200 years or so, and obviously kind of grew up in a situation that was more savanna-like than what it is now. But much of what you see in this photograph is undergrowth, understory growth of the honeysuckle and the invasive stuff. This is kind of a random slide, just because somebody brought up the issue, what is actually going to be part of the Iron Bridge Subdivision and Association, and that's what we're showing here. The other outlying lots are going to remain with the original sellers of the property, so that Halen's on the west, and Kinnon's is a small part, right, kind of in the middle, and the two on the east are the Lees.
Yeah, so the zoning is like the 60-plus acres, but our development is like 39, just right at 40 acres.
Basically. So wrapping up the initial considerations, there's no such thing as a primeval forest. This is certainly not one, and it is overrun, and that is a term that Joe Herring, the forester, used. And he also, this is not a quote, but it's a word. It's a quote, but anyway, He said, blindly applying a no tree cutting approach is not realistic or not even desirable. And this last statement is from the IDNR's 2016 Forest Health Highlights, that no longer will passive management allow for woodlands to be preserved in the condition they are today, because in many cases, the condition they are in today. Is not
right, as Jerry noted, right now we don't recognize, the only thing we recognize about a tree is how big it is. We don't recognize what kind it is, whether it's supposed to be there, if it's beneficial. And so I think you rightly pointed out, that's something we need to address and make sure that we're separated.
Yeah. Also wanted to point out, does residential development mean degradation? And no, it doesn't. It certainly can, of course. But even the C2C plan has this statement: it is possible to meet human and economic needs and at the same time maintain or improve the quality of the environment. And that's what we're presenting here today. Let's back up.
Again, back to the timing issue, you know, the county literally just spent a ton of time and energy making the good plan the next 20 years, and we read it in its entirety.
cover to cover, it is a great document. Everyone should be committed for that. I want to make clear, even though it says on paper we're here to amend it, amend being by definition is to make minor changes, to make more fair, to make more accurate and up to date. You know, just the fact that the county's 367,360 acres of land, plus all the city government land use plans, 90,000 citizens, all different opinions to consider, is clear and completely understandable, given the sheer size of the task at hand. It's nearly impossible to cover all these areas in great detail. I mean, just impossible. You can't humanly, possibly, or nor expected to walk that many acres and study it in detail. So I had to use a lot of computer generation, LIDAR, GIS mapping, just to pull out right from the CTUC plan, section 4-17, 4-20, it says information in this chapter is gleaned from the August 1975 natural resources analysis conducted by the county. 42 years old information is what was used to make this plan for the natural resource area. Also states in CTUC 4-17, a thorough flora and fauna inventory of sensitive and potentially sensitive areas was not possible through GIS analysis and should be done, which clearly states again that it was right in CTUC a detailed study was not done. In fact, this property is a prime example of this map. That is the current, in the map, adopted last August, natural resource designation. Illustrates the broadness of the map. I mean, it honestly doesn't even adhere to, which Jerry mentioned even in his report, it doesn't match any of the topography, it doesn't match the vegetation. It's spotty, and it almost looks like a computer glitch or something. It's just not, it's not even, it doesn't make any sense, honestly. Look at where our road is, almost all of it's not even in the NRA. I mean, I don't know. The only way this, so again, the only way a CTUC plan of this magnitude could be done is to use a 1975 analysis and use general maps. We're looking at, but
I was just going to state regarding a couple times it's been said that the thing is entirely in a natural resource area. Well, according to the map, it's not, but we grant that that map obviously doesn't show areas where there's some trees, but it also shows as designated natural resource area cropland and pasture land that shouldn't be within that. So the whole thing is just...
Which is where I took, and I don't know if you guys took it this way or not, but I took it, you know, our staff trying to really work with you to look at possible alternatives, this map notwithstanding. I think we all recognize that the map as it exists is not exactly what we find on the ground.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to deal with a little, and I think you are too, trying to deal with what's really on the ground.
Yeah, and the staff, but the staff is using this map as one of their key components against us. And I feel, you know, a lot of people here are obviously going to feel like we're attacking them. Jerry is on the staff to create the CTC plan. You know, we're not, you know, I feel like we're literally... We literally just finished this, and I asked them to change it. I'm like, well, yes and no. We're not here to change the goals and objectives. We're not here to, but we are here to refine some of it, clean up this map, and make it be something that is workable for everybody, and preserve that.
And Chris, I don't take it that anybody feels like you're attacking them, or that. I think Jerry really means it when he says, we appreciate the relationship we have. It just so happens that planning and zoning came down on the opposite side of where you want this to go.
Yep. Yeah, one of the P&Z, a couple of those guys actually helped create the CTC plan too. Really, again, we want to embrace it and honor the goals of both the county and the city of Hawksley and the current landowners. And that's what we're here to do.
Again, I am going to apologize for the lengthiness of this, but I want to go through the CTC plan and how we are addressing these issues, because I think there was a blanket statement made in the presentation and in the staff report that we are pretty much totally not in compliance with that, and we disagree quite substantially on that level. So some of the core principles of the plan generally discourage development within these areas. And again, as I mentioned earlier, it's not a pristine woodland. This is a unique situation, and its location with golf course and
the other rural transitional areas.
Yeah, the rural transition area.
Pomada actually combines those and connects the other rural transitional areas.
It's very much infested with invasive plants, and this development and our plans and our covenants and our programs for it can really actually enhance the area. And we'll point out, too, that that principal one says generally discourage development. Discourage does not mean prohibit, and I think that's kind of the viewpoint that some have taken on this. And in fact, in the staff report, I think twice it references that the C2C plan strongly discourages development, which is not what it says.
It doesn't say that at all.
It's generally discouraged, and later on it talks about ways to approach development in these areas. As far as principle number two, mitigation, as Jerry mentioned, we are below that county threshold for requiring it, but we are providing it in the means of street trees and landscape plans and the reforestation of the north area. Consider the NRA area's inclusion in the Greenbelt District. Well, unless there's other methods. Well, we have established some other methods, and we're establishing a preservation easement, as Jerry showed in that one almost illegible document with all the different shadings and everything all over it, because there's so much going on there. But we're allowing for a significant amount of the area to be in a preservation easement where everything is protected, the slopes, the vegetation, where cleanup of the invasive species is allowed. And positive maintenance is allowed, but otherwise is protected. I would note that, you know, it says talks about putting it into the GBC. Well, GBC allows crop agriculture. Well, we've got about, 6 acres up there?
Yep.
That are in crops, which contribute to some water quality issues with the nutrients. That's going to be taken out and they need to go to pasture. Well, it will be
pasture.
Trees are pasture, yeah. So,
yeah, what we believe is that we are doing more than what's required. We're below the tolerances, and we're actually, again, embodying what was started here and actually adding more preservation ground and protecting what everyone's trying to save. Without this development, there is no protection. It's just a designation without any enforcement, and that's what we're providing is the easement and permanent deed restrictions and permanent reinforcement of those principles.
Yeah. This goal and objective here has to do with water, surface water and groundwater. And with regard to protecting that, if none of the development is happening anywhere near the creek, other than the initial crossing to get up and into the area where we're developing there, the stormwater is going to be managed by a minimum of SUDOS recommended best management practices, and that's detention basin and appropriate release, and in the covenants, which you should have a copy of in the draft covenants in your report, how we're going to address and encourage individual homeowners to deal with their own rainwater, whether they capture it in a barrel or they have rain gardens or something. So really, no impact on the water.
And you'll hear from some people today when the public comments talk about erosion and water quality. And the fact is, I agree with them. And frankly, without our subdivision, without our stormwater management plan to divert the stormwater away from those cliffs where the erosion is happening, there's nothing to stop that. All that erosion will continue happening. We're actually taking water away from the bad cliffs. So that's our stormwater plan, is to prevent erosion. And leaving it alone does nothing but allow it.
You know, one of our points is that with a project like this, there's much greater potential for proper management to happen, and one of the reasons is the financial burden of that is spread over 17 owners instead of 3, and there's motivation to do that, and there is basically some teeth in the covenants to make sure that it gets
done. And the permanent easements.
Yeah, and the permanent easements. Preserve land, soil, geological resources, and again, same thing, just greater potential because of the broader base of ownership. No construction is going to occur on the slopes, and all those elements are contained within the preservation easement.
What will be the distance from any of these slopes for any construction?
We looked at that with
with our soil tech engineer.
He's preparing a report, and he was talking just by eyeballing it in the very minimum range was 30 feet, but we're looking at probably more like 50 to 100 feet
yeah.
of staying away.
I don't want to put my house on a cliff. That's
even though the view is great from there, frankly, you know, that one shot that was shown of the view over the creek down below, there, a house will not be that close to have that view. You'll be able to walk out there and see that view, but you're not going to see it from your house.
Okay.
Restore and the natural diversity, dynamics, distribution, habitats. That's not going to happen if this land is left alone. And if this project happens, there will be the opportunity to do that on an individual lot basis and even on an association-wide basement in the preservation easement or with the reestablishment of some forested areas. Again, the covenants will put teeth to that, and we'll have the plan and the plant palette within there that says this is what needs to be done. And we'll address that a little bit more later. Yeah, we'd be restoring some native vegetative cover in areas that are currently pasture. That would be the reforestation. And it's not going to be exactly apples for apples reforestation because it's somewhat of a different environment. It's the north side of the creek, a south-facing slope, and it's not quite as high up. So maybe the plant material shifts a little bit, but the whole idea...
Yeah, forester, though, recommended... Yeah. He'd work with us on exactly what he wanted to see there instead of the DNR's point of view and what they would want to see planted there.
Yep. Restrict development within environmental sensitive areas. The only area that we are developing in out of that list is the wooded areas, and that's really the core of everything. And again, as we mentioned, what is the quality of the wooded areas and really what is the impact going to be? And our proposition is that the impact can be good. One of the goals, to promote and conduct environmental education to create awareness and behavior change for improved natural resources. And we've talked about trying to develop, and I think ISU and even some local schools would be very interested in working with us and monitoring some of these conservation projects that we're proposing just to see how they work.
Yep.
And provide access to the open space for study. Speaking of open space, a couple times mentioned that we are deficient in open space.
It's really a semantics thing.
It's technically, depending on how you look at it, we may be deficient in common open space, which I don't believe we are, and I'll show you that later, but obviously the vast majority of this development is open space. Okay, Chris, you're on.
Again, you're going to hear some public comments, some very well-intentioned testimonies from here. I really do appreciate the planes. Like I say, for the most part, I agree 100% with what they're saying. But however, they can't be fully aware of the uniqueness of the situation. This is private property. I mean, they weren't out there with the DNR. They weren't out there with the staff. They weren't privy to all the conversations we've had. So I just want to point that out, that, again, on a blanket thing, it looks like we're going to cut trees down, but we're actually... Again, promoting tree growth and doing things that are going to be supportive of the C2C. It's also very easy just to assume that all development is bad and any change to existing is bad and developers are just trying to make money, don't care about the environment, we're going to ruin it and pollute. That may be true in a few cases. I mean, years ago, it really just got to be further from the case. Some are also concerned about the deer and wildlife. Well, again, it's often assumed that our deer are in great danger. Our deer numbers are critical low. Deer hunting should be outlawed, et cetera. Well, it's simply, again, not true. Citing the official DNR results here in 2006, a deer population in Iowa hit an all-time high, 650,000 deer, I think maybe all-time ever. It was so populous, DNR actually opened up extra seasons to try and thin the herd down. Because if left unchecked, deer would actually start to erode with chronic waste disease, and breeding, malnourishment, and actually have a massive impact on our crops. Right now, that feels a sustainable level, around 500,000 here in Iowa.
I had five sleeping in my backyard last night.
Yep. The DNR said properly managed hunting seasons is the single most effective way to ensure the longevity of the herd. If hunting was outlawed, the estimated deer population would double in less than 3 years. And because the deer are so prolific, in their reproduction and ability to live virtually anywhere, even in urban areas.
In our backyards.
Yeah, the deer population was decimated cropland. Currently, this land is actually a private deer hunting ground. We're in the trees where we're looking at the blind. There's four deer stands currently on the property. With the new development, where our houses would actually be helping deer because there's no hunting to be allowed, and we'd be actually putting more timber on the north to giving them more cover.
By the way, these slides are kind of just placeholders to help guide us through, but they are shots of the property and what you're seeing in that undergrowth. That's most of that is the honeysuckle and
also common belief the trees are all trees are sacred, and we live in a and we're on the verge of losing all of our trees in natural areas. Well, according again to the Iowa DNR, Iowa experienced a 40-year run of increased timber in natural areas for Iowa. 40 years we added timber. The forester also reminded us that, in fact, all trees will die someday. It's vitally important to plant new trees and have that new growth. That is what we're talking about. Trees are a renewable resource. It wasn't until 2012 when corn prices went through the roof with ethanol and everything else that we actually saw our first loss in 40 years of the natural areas. It was a 1% loss, less than 1% loss for a couple of year period there with all the corn prices and stuff. It's also typically assumed that developers account for all that loss. Again, it's simply not true. Of that less than 1% loss in the NRA area, the developers only accounted for 4% of that, while farmers accounted for 7% of that. The rest is due to other reasons, road construction and stuff like that. A couple of quick interesting facts in DNR. There's over 1 billion trees in Iowa, which means there's about 350 trees for every single person in Iowa, every man, woman, and child. There's also 2.99 million acres of timber in Iowa, with around 3.1 million people, which is just shy of an acre of timber for every single man, woman, and child in Iowa. As mentioned earlier, because of the lack of understanding of the C2C, Jerry was on site, and not to pick on Jerry, but he's like, you know, I think the honeysuckle is beautiful. I wouldn't want to take that out at all. It's beautiful. And then we have Mike and everybody else saying, well, the honeysuckle is bad. It's invasive. So I want to just... that's why we did take the DNR out there to try to get an unbiased, honest opinion of those and see exactly what is invasive and what to do. Honestly, going in that DNR, I mean, I had no idea what he was going to say. Truly, I mean, because it's unbiased. I thought he might very much potential and say, run away, this will never be touched. I didn't know, but it was clearly not that. It was very much the opposite of that.
Had he done that, we don't know what we would have been saying here today.
Yeah, that would have probably just pulled our whole deal if he said that. Really, two main beliefs when it comes to conservation is one, just to leave it alone, preserve it in its current state, and walk away. The other is that, which is held by a DNR and even the C2 plans itself, is that there is no such thing as a pristine forest. The best approach is a proactive management of the land. According to the forest, there is much work to do on this land. It's still overgrown with invasive species. And in fact, if we do nothing, we lose what we're all trying to save here. And letting non-native trees and plants take over our natural areas is now C2C plan shows, and we showed in earlier slides. It's clearly not what the DNR wants. In chapter 421 of the C2C, says invasive vegetation has a detrimental effect on native plant wildlife communities. Invasive species should be removed or minimized. It's right in the C2C plan. It says that. It's right there. According to the forester again, the last thing we do is to leave this alone. The honeysuckle theft and shock will continue to grow. What it does is it starves out the understory. So all the oaks and everything that are trying to replant themselves, they can't. And you walk that land, there is no new growth of oaks anywhere. 200 years ago, we had wildfires that would come through and burn off all the understory. We had more grazing and crop and the animals to keep the honeysuckle in check. But there's no grazing there now. We haven't had wildfire in 200 years. So our oaks and our maples that are actually at a big disband right now and are being choked out. The next slide here is actually a Facebook post from the Story County Conservation on January 8th of this year, just a couple weeks ago, where it says staff is actively managing invasive species as part of Hickory Grove watershed. You know, Jerry made a very couple times very clear that the Story County doesn't have invasives. The Story County Conservation is posting on Facebook that they're actually taking it out.
In the state, the DNR definitely has a list of invasive species.
Well, and all Jerry's referring to is we don't have
a legal one or an official one. Right.
We recognize the size of tree. I think really important to point out, I think we are more interested, especially through our conservation department, we're much more interested in having healthy natural yep. native habitats than we are just having native habitats. But that's a relatively new occurrence. I mean, when you look out on the line of all this, and go ahead and finish up.
Yeah. Again, the Iron Bridge Covenants require each lot owner to do a tree inventory, locating every tree. To do that, that's the idea to promote ownership of the trees and education of the homeowners that all these trees are here for a reason and help them understand what each individual lot has. Portion of our dues will go towards the fund, the special funds project, $1,000 every lot purchase will go to the special funds project. Again, all that provides funds, which is also a common occurrence here. Who pays for all this? How does this get done if we don't? Again, we talked about the oaks and how we're six beautiful oaks, kind of the pillars of the community, I call them, and they're awesome. They won't be touched by any houses, by any roads. The layout just worked out perfectly to not do that.
So with what we're proposing here, we see some solutions to some issues and some opportunities here. And so I just outlined a few of those. And one is what is desired in the CGC, the increase of diversity of species, that we can do that, use of natives in landscapes. All this is included and codified, I guess, in the covenants. Control of the invasive species, which programs, again, will be laid out in the covenants and programs will, or a plan will be required of each individual homeowner. The potential for stream bank and slope projects for protection there. And again, it's facilitated by the oversight of the Homeowners Association, the preservation easement restrictions, and the pride of ownership. And as I mentioned earlier, broader financial resources. So having 17 families that live in this piece of property, they're going to be buying into there because of what it is, because of the trees. They're going to want to preserve as much, and because it's a part of the covenants, at the outset of their interest into this land, they're going to know what's required of them. As I mentioned earlier, it's a great opportunity to partner with educational institutions to learn more about conservation-type development. Some special projects, we're going to show you a slide in just a little bit here. Prairie restoration in some areas, conversion of cropland to pasture, possible roadside upgrades, slope reinforcement, and that's what we've got the geotechnical engineer looking at. And stream bank improvements, and we intend to. We know this will be expensive, but it's something that Chris wants to do. But it's something that obviously the cost of it is going to get shared with all the lot owners. But also, there are some additional funding sources that can help it in
the REAP programs.
And things like that. So we'll be researching that. Implementation, the preservation easement defines all the areas that are to be preserved and how they're to be managed. It will be identified on the final plat. It describes the management, the limitations, and again, oversight by the Homeowners Association. The covenants, individual lot management plans, or landscape management plans will be required, which will include a tree inventory, and the homeowners will be supplied with a native plant species palette from which to improve their landscape. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they can't use non-natives and flowers and stuff around the house, but in dealing with their larger lots and protecting and maintaining the woodland areas. Chris already mentioned the special projects funds and how that can get financed. Here's a slide of our proposed conservation projects that Chris would like to do. The area north there, the reforestation and naturalization of that area, that's what we talked to Joe Herring about, expanding the woodland that's just to the north of the property and extending it a little farther down the slope as the slope shallows out. The other remaining area of the cropland that will get converted to pasture, what Chris has in mind is to put like a horse barn out there and a couple of horses. And then there's a little area that could be really cool for some prairie restoration that would have a great interest in the educational community and love to do some creek bank restoration. Jerry pointed out how there is some erosion there, and that's kind of a big thing too. and still a growing science or art to how you do that. And there's great potential there to get ISU or other entities involved and working with that and seeing if we can be part of developing some best practices for that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Roadside native seeding, that's just something that would maybe take what's out there now and look at reestablishing more native grasses, wildflowers, and things like that. And again, slope reinforcement, there's some significant erosion there, and that's why we had the geotechnical guy out to look at that and give us some recommendations. With regard to this, we've got a proposal from one consultant that would help us develop these plans, and Joe Herring of the DNR said he would do the same. And there's another consultant, Inga Lamb, out of Polk City, I think, that we're going to talk to as well and get proposals from her. Just, we haven't developed these plans in detail, obviously, because it's a little early.
Yeah, get through this first.
Yeah.
I promise conclusion's coming now. Wrap this up.
Eventually, yeah.
Really, I just want to hand it out a highlight sheet, just so you guys know, just again, this highlight is exactly what we're talking about. If this project does not move forward, I just want to iterate, nobody wins. I mean, not me, not the current property owners, not the county, for sure not the forest. You'll hear from the public that it needs to be preserved, but they're actually, what they're asking, it can only be done with these covenants and their front easements. Again, left alone, these trees are left to be choked out by the honeysuckle. The stream bank is left to erode, continue to erode. Nothing happens. Like, that is not a win. That's not preservation. That's just allowing the weeds and the understory to be continually choked out. No one wins there. You know, our schools are not met. The county's conservation goal. The C2 plan itself is not honored. There will be no growth of timber. We lose out on acres of new timber and new growth. And then instead of protecting Iowa's native Iowan trees, we're allowing invasive trees to take over, and that whole restoration of non-native really is what's coming, which is actually the exact opposite of conservation. We do follow the rules when we do this. We're actually beneath the thresholds that says discourage, but does actually make provisions with the 15% rule, which we are under that. Also highlights that the C2 plan itself, again, 4-20 says it is possible to meet this human economic demand at the same time, improve quality and thing. A couple of real quick on alternative compliance, that was brought up a couple times. Lot 16 is actually my personal lot. We're going
to... Well, let's go to that. Yeah, we'll go back to that.
Yeah, well, just real quick on this alternative compliance. Except in your regular shake lot, there's a front, back, side. How do you actually define that? The whole reason was that we actually took out that little cul-de-sac that you saw earlier. It was actually a suggestion from the staff to actually reduce the impact of trees and then reduce the impact of the detention area. That was a suggestion from them, and actually a great idea to reduce the impact. So it's not semantics there, or however you want to say that. It's actually a benefit, and then again, how that's presented. The other one was the open space requirement. We're doing open space, but it's protected by easement. So the semantics and terminology is different. On paper, maybe it says open space this way, and then it says easement here, but we're actually having, what's the total, 9... we're actually going to be 28% instead of, you know, if you want to call it open space and reduce the restrictions of the easement and reduce the protection, we can do that. But that's actually a negative. We're actually trying to do more to protect it by an easement instead of just a blanket open space. Those, the benefits are still there. The homeowner's still going to walk there. It's still going to enjoy it. It's still maintained by them. It's just more protection that way. So that's really a semantics thing.
Yeah. The way we approach that open space requirement, common open space requirement, is that we calculated what would be required if it were just the 17 lots. We didn't include the outlots on the north side of the creek because they're just open space themselves. It doesn't make sense to require open space on open space. So of that acreage where the 17 lots are, based on what we're given between the two outlots and the easement along the creek, we're providing 5.2 acres of common open space for use of those 17 lots, and that's really about 28% of the buildable lot, or of the lot area, the 17 lots.
Right, but we don't calculate it that way because it's not
it's not held by the association, it's held by individuals. Is that right, Jim? And if I see him right with the full use of the
easement. Well, and by easement, we are providing that full use and easement.
Yeah, they get an easement. As I say, it functions exactly the same.
Yeah.
It has more protection and more preservation of the stream and stuff.
Let's jump back to that. Just wanted to point out the benefits of this project. Greater potential for the proactive and responsible management of the land, control of the invasive species, the special projects that we talked about, the educational opportunities, and of course, you can't ignore the tax benefit to the county. You know, about $10 million in new homes out there. And believe it or not, we're wrapping up our part, but I did want to point out something. In the PNC recommendation, where they recommended that you deny some of the things that were mentioned, that it's an unnecessarily large subdivision. Well, just because of the status of the way the various lots, there are, what, four parcels involved?
Mm-hmm.
Three owners, four parcels. We couldn't just do it by plat of survey. It had to be go through the subdivision process and include all of those areas. So it's larger than, frankly, we would have preferred it. But even if that's the case, why is that a problem? I don't understand why that's an issue. The other thing, they said it's not consistent with the C2C, and we believe we have shown that it really is. Maybe not perfectly, and maybe not how some have envisioned it, but it's pretty much mostly in compliance with the C2C. They mentioned impact, and the implication was negative impact on water, and green belt, and the wildlife corridor, yet no evidence was given as to how that occurs, where we feel like we've given some evidence as to how we're going to protect it. And then the last comment was the homeowners will not want to pay for these projects. Well, how can a statement like that even be made? And as I mentioned earlier, these homeowners are going to go into this knowing what's ahead of them. And that's going to be partially why they're buying into this area, because of what it is, because of the conservation area it is. So. That's it.
Thank you. So, a couple points. Yeah, I don't have any questions. I appreciate the really, really thorough presentation. I think you guys hit the high points. I think I completely get your perspective on what this is and what it is not, and why it makes sense to you. Chris, I think you know this about me. I think when you went through your little philosophical statements, I agree with damn near everything you said as you went through and talked about those things. But I want to point out a few things. One, you started off by saying, you know, the timing of this is tough. If it was before the C2C, or if it was after we had more clearly gotten the C2C codified and defined, how would everything work? I think there's a lot of truth to that. I'm not sure that it's. You could just make a blanket statement that this would have passed 2 years ago or it would have passed 2 years from now. But I think you make a good point. I think what is not being recognized in all this is that the county is not, and not intended to be, and should not be, real good at encouraging development. That's not what the county exists for. That's what municipalities exist for. And so there, I believe, necessarily are some additional hurdles to development in the county than if you were developing in a municipality. You dealt with those on Bella Woods. You dealt with those on the Irons. You know some of that. And those were more, for me, more logical kind of places for the county to say, yeah, development makes sense here. This one doesn't fall into that category quite as clear. Ultimately, the role of our planning and zoning commission and the Board of Supervisors as the ultimate say-so on matters like this is what is truly the highest and best use for any piece of ground within the county. Now, what's highest and best use for a piece of ground in the county that at this point is deemed to going to stay in the county is different than ground that's in a municipality or intended to go into a municipality. The highest and best use changes for those two things. And then the final thing we've got to look at that's different for this one, I think, than either Bella Woods or the Irons is existing county infrastructure. I'm thinking of 550th when I say this. Mm-hmm. Existing county infrastructure and how we would serve an increase there as we go through. So I'm just trying to give you the overview of where I am and what my concerns are as we move toward the public hearing. I want to give you a chance to address any of those. And Marty, if you have any questions or thoughts that you want to give Chris while he's sitting here, that would be a great time.
I'm sitting there. If you go back to my office, on my desk is the Tri-Hattery narrative on the Tedesco Center off Research Park. And so much of what is going to be proposed will be changes that we would make ourselves through a natural setting. So I'm sitting there. As I come to know, the conversation involves understory, ripples, oxbows, and whatnot. I realize some of these things are both identified and then man-made corrections are made to either augment them or enhance them. And I was sitting there listening. In fact, it's surprisingly much of the same story. I guess from the what I saw, when you're looking at the decades over aerials that this ground has come to be what it is today, only recently, and at a point in not that distant future, that some of this area was not what it is. It was fine. I guess my takeaway initially is I'm shocked to see the community that's been so aggressive on growth did not identify a contiguous portion that you're trying to step into. And I thought I would like to know why that was, or if that was on a planning basis.
Right.
And I get that, but I'm just saying it's just like, you know, Huxley is a shining star success in the county, and not see next to, you know, Deer Run. This wasn't already taken into on a planning basis. That's an answer I'm looking for. Right now, this granular evolution, you guys have certainly done your homework. Thank you for reading the C2C to the levels you've done. I don't know how many times we get into meetings in just privately or in open meetings where we ask people, look at this document. It was prepared with the input of the county. We realize that it's an evolving thing, that there are changes will be made. We fully acknowledge that some of our information there, as you pointed out, on the mapping side of things wasn't correct, but we will work to correct that.